Hello, welcome to the Sacred Cheese of Life. This is Emma. Today I'm going to talk about something called the idiot plot, which is something that I find incredibly annoying, and I'm going to try not to be super negative about it, but instead talk about it in sort of a positive way. Like, the idiot plot is... the idiot plot basically boils down to, I mean, you can look it up on Wikipedia. There's a very good definition of it there that I'm not going to read out loud to you. But the idiot plot means a story that only works if people are idiots. I mean, that's basically what it is. Either the main character is an idiot, or the police are idiots trying to not succeeding in figuring out a mystery, or somebody doesn't say something that if they said it, everything would resolve. Or basically people just behave in a way that people don't actually behave because nobody is actually that much of an idiot. And it is true that people don't say things they should say. That is true. However, if I tell this person there's a bear over there, they'll stay with me, and so I don't tell them. That's a very bad example. But you can all immediately think of 21,000 examples of not saying a thing makes something happen when saying it doesn't, or telling a lie makes something happen when it's obvious that the lie is not true. The idiot plot really annoys me, especially when the main character is the idiot. Okay, so I'm going to talk about two books. I'm not going to name either one. I suppose if you go to Story on the Brain, you can figure out which ones they are. And you may know them anyway. But there's two books that this bothered me so much. And it was only in a conversation with a friend that I realized what bothers me most in fiction, because I was like, what books do I hate the most? These two. Why? Because of the idiot plot. They both have it in different ways. Okay, so the one is young adult, and the idiot plot comes in because there is a closed room mystery. There's my kitty. Hi, kitty. This is not a closed room, obviously. There's a crime that happens when these nine people are shut into this house, this country house with no access, etc. And it's so contrived that it makes my head hurt, right? Like, nobody else could possibly have gotten in there because there's a power line down and there's a power truck blocking the only road. Okay, but it's not an island. You know, there's woods. People can come through the woods. There's, like, unless there's a 40-foot wall around it. And even then, what, do we not have helicopters? I mean, there's ways people could have come in, but everyone just accepts that. Okay, it's closed. Nobody else could possibly have gotten in. And then there's a murder. So one of them did it, right? Like, unless you're an idiot, you know one of them did it. But none of them know that one of them did it. None of them can accept that because that's their friends. They couldn't have done it, even though no one else could have done it. That made me so angry. The other thing is the police immediately accept that none of them did it, even though no one else could have gotten in. Like, everyone's an idiot in so many ways in this book that it made me infuriated. And I was waiting for this book to come out. I was excited for it. I was at the bookstore and the bookstore owner was like, here it is. You know what I mean? Like, I had pre-ordered it. It was ready. He knew why I was there. It was one of those. I always get this author's books the day they come out. And I was so mad. But I wasn't mad the first time I read it. I was mad the second time I read it because I knew what had happened and I could see how utterly contrived everything was. It's like a big lie somebody tells you, where in the moment you're like, oh, okay, I guess that makes sense. And then later you look back and you're like, that was a huge lie. I had a friend like that. Well, she wasn't a friend in high school who would tell me these enormous lies just to manipulate me, just to make me jump and do these things. And once I figured her out, you know, obviously stayed far, far away from her. But before that, I was like, well, she's my friend. She wouldn't lie to me for no reason. Well, she had a reason. Her reason was she is a sociopath, minimum, who enjoyed hurting people. Down with her. So that's the idiot plot in that first novel, okay? I read it once and I thought, wait, what? It also has the weakest resolution I've ever seen in any book. It entirely revolves around the fact that someone had a toothbrush in their bag. That's it. That's the only evidence. That's it. And it doesn't like go to the police or anything. It's just like, oh, the other friends are like, it must have been this one friend because they had a toothbrush in their bag. That's it. We understand now. We get it. And it's a child who says this to a bunch of adults. It's just the dumbest plot I've ever seen. Just the worst. Except for this other book, which is very famous in literary circles, and I understand the writing is gorgeous, okay? I will give them that. It's a literary novel. It's about a guy who is in a terrorist attack in a museum and steals a painting, okay? Very simple beginning. He's gross and unpleasant before that. And he never gets better. He's a child. I guess he's a child. I can't remember how old he is. But he's not an adult. And so maybe that's a little bit excusable. But he never figures out how to give the painting back. And that is an idiot plot par excellence, right? It's not that hard. Okay, let's think of 10 ways right now you could get a painting back to a museum. Crate it up and mail it. Fine. You do that. It's easy. Put it in a bag or a box and check it in the cloakroom or whatever, right? They make you leave your bags. Leave your bag there and don't come back. Easy. Oh, you're worried about fingerprints or whatever? Go to the store and buy a backpack and put it in there. Like, it's just not that hard, which makes this person an extreme idiot. And he cannot figure it out. And it's like 1,000 pages of novel. I read it straight through because I wanted to know. See, this is why it was a good plot, other than the idiocy. I wanted to know what happened to the painting. I wanted to know how he resolved it. But he was so stupid that for long portions of the book, he didn't even actually have it. And he didn't know. This friend of his, again, with the quote friend, they're everywhere, aren't they? Maybe we should do a whole episode on the quote friend. Stole it, used it as whatever, collateral, or I don't even know anymore because it was a while back. And again, it infuriated me to the point of practically blacking out. So he didn't even have it for long periods, and yet it was still this obsession that ruled his life. He was such an idiot that he couldn't accomplish anything in a straightforward way. He cheated, he lied, he stole. He spent entire chapters drunk or on drugs and like vomiting everywhere. This was one of those vomit books that thought vomiting and squalor was cool. So we're never going to agree on that. It's not. Hi, it's not. I don't know why people think it is. It's so juvenile to me that somebody thinks, oh, it's so cool. They laid around and got drunk and barfed on the rug. Really? You think that's cool? I don't think we're on the same page here. So maybe that's part of the idiocy is there's an author and maybe a whole school of thought that says certain things are super cool that I just really think are just the stupidest thing ever. I just don't think any of that is even interesting. I think it's the opposite of interesting. And so he's an idiot. He's such an idiot. And people make references to this novel. Is it Dostoevsky's The Idiot? I can't remember who wrote it, because I'm apparently also an idiot and didn't look it up. But the novel isn't even about that. It's not, like, it's not parallel enough. It's not enough of a reference to make it a reference. So what is happening? It's just the most annoying book. Finally, after he almost destroys everyone around him, it does get back to the museum. I can't even remember how. This is how mad that book made me. My head was exploding. Never mind that I just read 1,000 pages of lovingly described orange vomit. A butterfly just went by outside. So, okay, those are two idiot plots. You've got a stupid plot, and you've got a plot about an idiot. There's another story that drove me crazy, which is a movie, for the same reason. And this is the same as the first one. Like, it seemed okay first time through because it was all these clues and people making choices and actions that I was like, okay, why are they doing that? You're meant to think that when you're watching a mystery or reading a mystery. Why are they doing that? And you figure it'll make sense later. It doesn't. In this movie, people do all these things that are mystifying, and then at the end you're like, oh, it's this. But when you watch it again, none of it adds up. The things they do not make sense when you know the answer. They don't make sense at all. They're nonsense choices. They're there purely because the writer wanted to mislead you. They're just deliberate misleads. But which is fine, except they didn't make sense in a story way either. And it has to be one or the other or both, right? Somebody has to do things that are internally consistent. People do random things, yes, in real life, but in fiction needs to be logical and internally consistent. Okay, like if you have a person who's constantly running around doing random things, sure. Then they're a person who constantly runs around doing random things. But if you have a person who is generally logical and consistent, and then they sometimes do these completely ludicrous things and happens to be centrally located in your mystery plot, that is cheating. That's cheating. And you can't do it. Also, this person was another idiot. He was an idiot. He was an idiot who cheated and stole and lied and tricked people. And the entire premise of it was utterly flawed. So this is a movie that failed the same as the young adult and the same as the literary novel. The person was an idiot and the the plot was stupid. The plot was stupid. The plot, I can't explain it without telling you exactly what movie I'm talking about, which I guess nobody cares as much with a movie. With a novel, you know, there's a singular person who wrote it and they can get mad at you. Not that they would care what I think. But the movie, it did not work. It only worked the first time through. And that is such a terrible flaw in any piece of fiction, especially a mystery. If it only hangs together when you don't know how it works, then it doesn't actually hang together. No, I hate it. Okay, when is it a good excuse to have a character be an idiot? Flowers for Algernon? I don't know. The character in Flowers for Algernon has a severe intellectual deficiency, right? So he's allowed. He's actually allowed to make choices that don't make sense. Otherwise, man, I don't know. If you set someone up as someone who makes really bad choices, that's fine. I do that myself all the time. But the reason is they are very young. They are sometimes 16, 15, 14. I don't think I write 15 and 14. I generally stop at 16. They make choices that aren't in their own best interests. That's fine for a child. Absolutely. When they're older, what excuse does someone have that would make it legit for them to be an actual idiot about stuff? And I think of it in terms of a friend. Like if you have a friend and they screw up one time, you're like, oh man, you screwed up. And they know it. And they're like, yeah, I screwed up. You let that go. You don't worry about that. You're like, oh man, I'll help you. I'll help you. Let's solve it. Let's figure it out. That's fine. If they do it over and over and over again, I don't know if you stay friends with that person because that is exhausting. And they're not learning from their mistakes and they're kind of being an idiot, which I guess I don't really like in real life either. Although I think we're all kind of idiots about something. And that is when it works. Say there's your wonderful friend who's very smart and brilliant at their job and they can articulate everything that's going on and they can solve all these problems for themselves and others, but they're very stupid about relationships. Or they're very stupid about buying Funko Pops or something like that, right? Like everybody can have a thing, one area that they're an idiot about, and that's acceptable. That's fine. That's even cool. I actually really like that. I like it when everybody has some area of irrationality in their lives, because who wants to be around Mr. Perfect all the time, or Ms. Perfect? Not me. Luckily, I never am, because nobody is. But if somebody is an idiot about everything, it's just so tiring. Like, what do you want me to do? What's my role here? Is it rescuer? Because I don't want to keep rescuing you. I don't even want to rescue myself. And I got myself into my own pickles. So the idiot character is problematic for me. I don't enjoy a character who's a total idiot. Like I said, I do enjoy it when somebody has one area of their life where they're really stupid about things. They have a blind spot or they make bad choices in this area. Whatever it might be, they're obsessed with, you know, a TV show and in that one area of their life, they're completely irrational. Go for it. Live it up. That I think that makes a really good character. In fact, I can't think of anybody. I don't think I've ever met anybody who didn't have one area that they thought was the center of the world, like one area of obsession that they're so into. I love that. And I can't really think of anybody who doesn't have that offhand, whether it's like riding, you know, bikes, you know, being a cyclist, whatever, like writing music, or playing an instrument, or their church, or whatever it is. Who cares? I don't care. All I care about is that they're interested in something. Politics, so boring. I don't want to hear about it, but I'm glad you're into it. Whatever it is. I can tell you the one they don't want to hear about is writing. Nobody wants to hear about that, which I get. It's exactly like telling someone your dreams. Guess what I dreamed on purpose? Shut up. So I'm going to tell you about it, though, because you're stuck. The idiot plot came up. How did it even come up? We were just talking about, I can't remember. We were talking about books, and I was running into something in this current draft, which, by the way, I wrote like 25,000 words since I recorded last. I don't know. Something got completely unstuck in my head, and I just went all bonkers on it and wrote a ton every single day until, and I can't sleep when I'm writing a lot. I write a ton, and then I'm awake, and then I wake up early. It's kind of terrible. The only night I got sleep in the last 10 days or so was when I did not write. And I did not write because I started making my screened porch. I started cutting these gigantic pieces of screen, and it's so hard. And the animals were walking on it and snagging it and wrecking it, and it was making me insane. Like, I was about to scream the whole time. I get very frustrated, and when I get frustrated, I don't know, like, I lose my mind. I lose all rationality. And so, like, what I did was put up the dog gate, put the dog in the living room, shooed the kitty away. Kitty was like, I'm out of here. Bye. And so I was able to do it. But it was still insanely hard. And I mean, like, teeth clenching, sweat. I was shooting sweat out in every direction like a cartoon character off of my head. My shirt was soaked. It was not hot. And I wasn't exerting. I was just, like, measuring things and cutting things. So I get so frustrated and so wound up. I took Xanax and then couldn't write anything because I was a zombie, and then actually did sleep. That's the one night I slept the last 10 days. Oh, dear. And I don't even know how long it was. It was like 9 hours. Like, so not even a huge amount. I'm averaging 6 hours. It's not great. And I cannot get to sleep, and I cannot go back to sleep in the morning. However, I've got a whole lot of book, and it's great. So the idiot plot pertains to that because the person's young. They make one big bad decision based on insecurity and being dazzled, and it is a horrible decision. They don't know what they're getting into. They end up in a very bad situation. And this can easily happen to a young person, very easily. They don't have the experience. They don't have the understanding. They don't have the knowledge. And they don't have anyone in their corner. And so they make bad choices. It happens. And so it's the story of how this person gets herself out of that situation. And I kept having rescuers come in. And I have to go back and delete all the rescuers. And so my friend and I were talking about how in the trilogy, Harriet is always having these rescuers and having good things happen. Like, and how it goes back to how I think things are impossible. I do feel, and I know they're not. This is maybe my biggest spot of idiocy. I feel like absolutely everything's impossible. Oh, I have to get this stack of grading done. Well, that's impossible, which sounds so stupid because I know it's not impossible. I know it's perfectly possible. But looking at it, it feels absolutely impossible to me. I have to break it down and go, okay, well, there's 26 papers or 50 papers or 120 papers, and I have 10 days or I have a week or whatever. How many do I have to do per day? Okay, so if I do 10 per day, you know, then I'll be done in blah, blah, blah. I have to do that. And then 10 per day, suddenly I'm like, oh, I can do that. It'll suck to do 10 per day every day, but I can do it. Oh, I have to do 20 per day to get them done in time. Okay, that's really, really hard. It's going to be terrible, but I can do it. But before I do that, before the breakdown of everything, it feels impossible. And with larger things like a job search or moving or whatever, it entirely feels impossible, and it stays impossible. It doesn't, because it's out of my control. Like, I can apply to all the jobs. I can't make them give me the jobs. It's not something I can do, so it feels impossible. I fundamentally don't believe I can change things in the world. And that's obviously just learned helplessness. But saying that doesn't help. It's like how I understand gravity or something like that. It's how I know the world to be. And talking myself out of it does not work. You cannot talk yourself out of this stuff, or there wouldn't be therapists. And I had a therapist, but she sucked so bad. I got rid of her. So I've had good ones in the past, but they aren't here. And one of them moved. One of them left. Anyway, I just don't have one. And I know what they do, and it seems like you should be able to do it yourself. Like, challenge your views of the world. You should be able to CBT yourself, but you can't CBT yourself, really. Is it CBT? CBD is something else. That also doesn't work on me. Okay, so learned helplessness gets into my characters. And so I wrote this draft, and I have to, again, go back and take out some of the things where people helped her. I had this friend of hers, I had this, you know, the friend's great aunt. People were giving her things and helping her out. Somebody even rescued her from the place where she was locked in, and I have to go back and change it all. She can't be helpless. She has to do it herself. And it was very helpful for me to have someone who's read my work who can say, yeah, this is a tendency. This is a thing. It's disappointing when it happens, because you're like, you're cheering her on, and then she just gets bailed out. That's bad drama. Very bad drama. I hear typing. It cannot be typing. Nobody else in this house types. There's a dog, there's a cat. Neither of them are moving. and I hear typing. It's not happening. Okay, so learned helplessness and the idiot plot go together because learned helplessness is basically saying, well, I'm an idiot. And that's one thing I hate about it. And that's why I hate it when I catch myself doing it. Saying, I'm an idiot, I can't do it. Yeah, you can. Everybody does. You can do it. I'm perfectly capable of doing these things. Learned helplessness is a cheat and it's a way out. It's a way of saying, oh, I don't wanna, I can't. I'm so afraid of failing, I'm gonna say I can't do it. And I don't mean to sound mean to myself, but it is very annoying to live with this. Like, oh, I can't make this screen work. But then, you know, like I said, I get so frustrated and angry and upset and then have to resort to pharmaceuticals because I was like at the point where I really was going to scream. I was just going to sit there and scream. And I was like, all right, you got to intervene in this somehow. And I do all the things. I take breaks, do deep breathing. But there's the thing, I have to get it done. I can't get it done. I have to get it done. I can't get it done. And when I run into a stasis point like that, like it's neither way is possible. Neither way is acceptable. It's not acceptable that it doesn't get done. And it's not acceptable that I'm trying and I can't get it done. It's like my brain explodes. Yeah, I'm not a super patient person. I get very easily frustrated and I don't handle frustration well. So the learned helplessness gets into the characters and it's bad for drama. It's very bad. It's very bad to have a character be like, oh, everything's really hard. It's impossible. Yay, I'm rescued. Okay. So, like, that's maybe a good wish fulfillment. Although, even then, I don't think you should sit around waiting to be rescued. Like, you're a princess in a tower. Even the princess in the tower is probably not just sitting there, but is doing something to try to make it happen. I very much doubt they're just sitting there. So this character, Lisette, this is Summerlands. She's the girl's mom. And this is the story I've never told, which is the other side. What happened to the mom? What happened to their mom? I never wrote it. And I did figure it out and wrote out a plan, which is what I'm following. And I don't know when I did that, last fall or something. And so I had the plan and I was just like, and go. And so just started writing. And she wrote a diary. And it's always fun to write a diary because she's kind of a dope at the beginning. And she figures stuff out really fast. And her style changes, which goes back, I guess, to the open boat and the imitative fallacy and whatnot. But and yellow wallpaper, all these things, you know, it's an old style. But it is how people write diaries. It's perfectly accurate. You write one way when you're excited about a thing, and then you write a different way once you've found out that thing's a disaster and you've dug yourself into a deep, deep pit. Or a high, high tower, whatever it might be, not to mix my metaphors up. But she's in a bad, bad situation, and her voice changes, and that's really fun to write. And as she gets older and goes through more and more different kinds of disastrous hells, because once you're in a bad spot, it's very hard to get out of it. And she has to hide out and hide her identity and find a way to earn money and survive. And it's just really hard. Like, I think it's the hardest situation I've ever put a character into. Much harder than Harriet. And Harriet was really, she started in a bad spot and it got harder. Like, she would go somewhere like, yay, new place. Oh, hell, this is really hard too. How am I going to do this? She was in Los Angeles trying to save up money for an apartment, which, good luck. I mean, you need a lot of money for first, last, and security out there. They cost so much money. They cost much more than this house I'm renting. Nice, what is it, five room? It depends how you count the L. Nice house, though. And you get, like, a little cardboard box to live in out there. Even whenever I lived there, which was, what, going on 20 years ago, I was paying almost as much as I'm paying for this whole house now. Who knows what they cost now? A lot more. So she's in a bad situation and she has to get herself out of it with limited resources, which was one of my favorite kinds of stories. I love that kind of story. And I want to see her succeed. And I'm laughing because of all the rescuers. I wrote in all these things and I'm like, wait, you can't do that. You just solved it for her. You had the nice lady at the art store, like, fill out applications for artist and residency positions. No, you can't do that. It's too easy. And when does that happen? I don't think people get rescued like that. And if they do, boy, somebody that interfering and bossy is not going to stop at just rescuing you. They're going to have control in a lot of ways. They like control. I have to change that. Now she's going to go be an au pair, which was my plan when I was 18. And my parents said, my mother said, if you can't pay for college yourself, you can't go, which most people can't, you know, like I had been working. My friend didn't even know this. I had been working as a babysitter. I worked as a babysitter every summer through high school. And I mean full days, but they took the money for college and then said, if you can't pay yourself, you can't go. And I was like, well, I'm sure as hell not staying here. So I was going to go be an au pair in Norway because you can do that. And I was all set to go. Like I had an international driver's license. I had done all these things. I was ready. And then they were like, okay, you can. So, okay, I'm going off to the conservatory then, where again, I was put in an impossible position and had to figure my way out of it with no resources, no backup. Nobody had my back. I'm not good at that. And it keeps happening. And when it happens to you at 18, most people don't have the resources to figure their way out of it. And I certainly did not. So there you go. That's a tricky one. But that was my plan. Go be an au pair. And so I gave it to her. She can have it. But she actually does it. She goes to Finland. And I picked Finland because I don't know why exactly. Except we had an exchange student from Finland living with us for my last year of high school. And I've been there more than I've been anywhere else except for where I lived on study abroad, which was Germany and Austria. And I don't want to go there. So I gave her Finland. Here, you can have Finland. It's interesting to write about because I was there for not very long, a very long time ago. But there are things I remember like that, you know, just the alienation feeling, which I enjoy, of being somewhere you don't belong. I like that a lot. You don't belong and people look at you and know you don't belong. So you're kind of outside the rules in a lot of ways. Not to say idiot plot again, but it's more alien plot. And we can talk about alien plot another day, but I enjoy that. I like being the alien. So maybe that's why I like living in Maine, where I'm clearly an alien and people treat me that way. And people will say, so where are you from? As soon as I open my mouth. So you're not from here, huh? Yeah, no, I'm not. And it doesn't matter how long you live in Maine. If you're not from here, you're never going to be from here. It's not like other places. You can move to Indianapolis or whatever. And after a while, you're from Indianapolis, but not here. Sorry. Sorry, Maine. Lovely place. Not a place you can become naturalized. You can't become a naturalized Mainer. Nope. Does not happen. So that's the idiot plot. How do you solve the idiot plot? That's a good question. I'm glad you asked. When you're writing, don't have anything rest on someone being an idiot. That sounds so easy, but it's so easy to do it. It's so easy to go, well, people make mistakes. Sometimes people do dumb things. Yes, people do dumb things. We accept that. But we don't accept it when the entire plot rests on somebody being stupid about things, when most people are not stupid about those things. And again, if they're a child, they get a pass a little bit. And this was actually the origin of the conversation, because there was a book I read years ago this is the origin. I remember now. I was asking my friend, who happens to be an immigration attorney, about certain immigration possibilities for scams. Like, I wanted this girl in the book to get out of the country on someone else's license and ID and passport and all. And I wanted to know if that was possible. And now it's not really, because they use biometrics and they just scan your face. She said they scan your face and they know your itinerary, which, like, holy crap. But this is set in the past, and that stuff is only 3 or 4 years old. And so she could have traveled abroad. First, I had her change her name. So she used the fake ID. It was somebody else's ID who died, and went and changed her name. Okay. And she passed for this girl. They looked so much alike, they were always getting confused for each other. Maybe that's my cheat, right? But I don't know. That's the one. So she changes her name, and then she goes, she gets this job and she goes abroad. She just does it. And she's terrified the whole time, and it might not work out, and she's afraid she'll get caught and dragged back to this monster who imprisoned her. And it doesn't happen. She gets free. And then when she does come back through, she's already a naturalized citizen in Finland, unlike Maine. Although I bet you, in Finland, you also cannot ever be a naturalized person. I'm betting. You're never a local. You'll never be a local. I'm sure it's like here. It's this way in a lot of places. If I moved to Louisiana, I would never be a local. Do you know what I mean? It's just that way a lot of places. You have to live in a big city with a lot of people coming and going who are from everywhere. And then you can be like, yeah, I live here and I've lived here a long time and I belong. I know where things are and how things work. And you can pass as a local. Now, the funny thing is, traveling from my study abroad program to Finland, every single place I went, people mistook me for a local. Maybe that's why I liked it, but I'm not. Like, I'm not from Germany, Austria, France, Belgium, you know, Denmark, Sweden, Finland. I'm not from any of those places. But everyone asked if I was from there. And I don't know why I can pass for a local in countries where I don't even speak the language, but not here, where everybody immediately knows I don't belong. It's very strange. Maybe I wouldn't pass anymore over there either. I don't know. Probably not. Yeah. Stranger in a strange land. So, Finland. Yep. She's over there. She's a naturalized citizen. And she comes back. She comes back because she's been following the husband guy who she never divorced. She faked her death. Well, they sort of faked her death for her. She ran away and they created a suicide note and said she killed herself. But there was no body. So it was completely implausible, but there was nobody there. So they couldn't say you murdered her. There's no body. It's just the weirdest thing. It's out of shame. Like, he didn't want to say she ran away from him. And so created this suicide note. Anyway, so she faked, basically just ran away. Desertion? I don't know. I don't know these things. I will look them up because this is how the conversation started. I asked about these things because I don't want to write something wrong and stupid in a book. Something where I read it, where someone would read it and go, that is not how anything works. This is wrong. Because that drives me the craziest. Worse than the idiot plot. Although, honestly, it's a cousin of the idiot plot. It's very close. Like, you can't just have facts that are wrong. My beloved Connie Willis did this in a book called Crosstalk, where she apparently didn't know anything about Twitter when she wrote it. I don't know if she knows about Twitter now, but she wrote this thing about Twitter that was such absolute nonsense. It is not how anything works. And it made me wild. Like, ask. And if you need it to be contrived, use a different app or something. Like, don't just say it wrong. Don't just use a wrong thing. Don't I get worked up about it? And so that drove me crazy. And then this other book I read years and years ago, it made me irate. First of all, it started with a girl who was told, don't go into the woods at night. It's dangerous. The first thing she did was go into the woods at night. Like, okay, come on. There's no need to do that. Come up with a good reason. Come up with, like, she heard a kitty crying. I would go out in the woods, even if you said not to. If I heard, especially if they were like, there's wolves and things. And if I heard a kitty crying, help me, help me. I would go out and help the kitty, right? I'd go out with a little can of tuna. Come here, kitty. Save the kitty. Save the kitty is a really good reason to do something. Just being, what's the word? I was going to say belligerent, but it's not belligerent. It's disobedient. Just like breaking rules for the sake of breaking them. We're right back to that terrible book with the boy in the painting where he did all the bad things because they were bad and supposedly that's cool. Goodness, that makes me mad. It's stupid. There has to be a better reason. Like, maybe you do a bad thing to impress somebody. That's a much better reason than you just think it's cool. People do things for good reasons generally or for bad reasons, but they're reasons. It's not just, oh, I want to be cool. It's generally not that weak. Certainly in fiction, it can't be that weak. It can't be as weak as these examples. But the story where she goes into the woods, she, at one point, stabs someone with a railroad rail. Was it a rail or a tie she used? Anyway, the book mixed up a railroad rail and a railroad tie. It didn't know which was which, and it got them wrong. And I thought, how did this get through? The person never looked it up. The editor never looked it up. No, the agent, no one ever looked this up and got it right. And it was just so irritating. So I need to get things right. So I ask an immigration attorney, will this work? And it turns out, yeah, 16 years ago, sure, that would have worked. You can, if you look enough like someone, you could have used their passport and traveled, as long as you don't have like fingerprints and all that in the system. If you've never been in the system for any reason, then nobody has anything on you. Like, how are they going to identify you? By your baby footprints? Which is how it works in Citizen of the Galaxy, a book I adore. Okay, so I had to get things right, and I don't want it to be an idiot plot, and I don't want it to be that infuriating thing where people are like, I don't know, just make it like this. Just say it's like this. It's a book. It doesn't matter. It does. It does. You have to do it right. Because then you get people like me reading it and literally throwing the book across the room because you couldn't be bothered to look up the difference between a railroad tie and a railroad stake and a rail. Which one of those three would you stab someone with? A stake, right? Like one of those big old nails? I have one in my mudroom because I found it by the road one day. Picked it up. Why wouldn't I? That would be the stabby one. A railroad tie is like, what, 8 feet long? 10 feet long? 12 feet long? They're huge. You can't even hardly, I don't think you could pick one of them up. You'd have to drag it. That infuriated me. I cannot have things wrong like that in my books. No, please. Okay, so the important part of the book is, A, she made a bad choice, and she had to deal with the fallout, and she had to figure out a way out of this situation. Nobody has her back. And I've got this sort of backstory in it, where her older sisters, every time they did something wrong, the parents were just like, that's it, we're done with you! Which is awful, but it's also how mine were, so we're allowed to do that. And so when she does this thing and marries this, she gets engaged to this sort of mogul guy who comes to look at their house to buy it. The parents are like, fine, bye. And they just leave. And they are that kind of people. They're kind of awful, horrible people who think that, you know, you made your own bed, now you have to lie in it. Like that kind of old school, tough as nails, but also dismissive as heck. I don't know what you compare dismissiveness to. Just if you screw up, you screwed up, and that's it. We're not going to help you. We're not even going to talk to you anymore. If you want to talk to us, come find us. But she can't, because as soon as she marries this guy, she's not allowed to leave, because he's a control freak. And he is a character who's really hard to wrangle, because he does awful things, and I hate his guts, but I have to make him get resolved. And he's not really in this story. He's about to be in it again. 25,000 words in. That's only one side. Like, it's alternating chapters between the girls and the mom. And I was going to give him chapters, and I'm really torn. If anybody has smart ideas on this, please tell me, because I don't know if I should. Because at the beginning, at least, he's so locked down and mentally ill, he can't even really, like, he's a fascinating character in a lot of ways. He can't really admit he was wrong. Nope. Can't do that. Can't deal with anyone else as a person. Nope. Deals with everyone like they're a business problem, which is just pathological. Regrets what happened to this girl. Regrets it so much. Thinks she is dead. Convinces himself she's dead. Believes she's dead. And then what sets off him getting his daughters back is he thinks he sees her, which he does see her. He sees an image of her, a picture on the internet or somewhere, and starts losing his mind again. Like, he can't bear it if she's alive. He can't bear it if she's dead. He's an interesting character, but I hate him, so he's hard to write. And I don't know if he should get his own chapters. Because at the beginning, when she's being locked up and stuff, his chapters would be like blank. Or they would be, you know, like, close the deal on X today. Traveled to Detroit. Whatever. It would be just like facts. It would be like an itinerary. We're back to itineraries that they scan your face and get. Which, doesn't that sound like a good science fiction idea where they can scan your face and they know your future plans? They know your itinerary that way? I wonder if they do. I wonder if there is, do you know, people do these psychological assessments where they can sort of figure out what's going to happen to you based on, which is stupid because they're like, oh, you were raised wealthy, you're going to be wealthy. Like, oh, thanks, genius. Most people's futures are in some way at least determined by their pasts. Thanks for doing science on that one. But I wonder if you can look at someone and figure that sort of thing out. I wonder how much is in people's faces. It's an interesting thought. And I need to give him something to love. Ugh. Besides money, I need to make him more interesting and more three-dimensional. Like, Lisette was nobody a week ago, and now she's a whole entire person with a complicated inner life and modern current relationships, interesting relationships in the past, things that happened, things that didn't happen. She's interesting. I have not figured out the dad yet, so maybe I should write him some chapters. And maybe they would be, like, cold, distant third, right? So maybe he thinks about himself in third person. Ew, how awful would that be to read? But maybe third person is the only way to get at this guy at all. I don't know. I haven't figured him out yet. His time is coming, because when I go back and write the girls' chapters, and I think I've got one, not one, because they're alternating the two different girls and then the mom. And so I don't know. I've got them on the plane. I've got them getting in the car. I've got them getting to the house, but they haven't walked in the door yet. You do not know how many times I've written the beginning of this book. A lot. I don't even know. So I haven't decided about the dad. I guess I can always just write it and see what happens. Words are cheap. All right, so that's the deal. That's the deal with Summerlands. You guys don't know, but this podcast has unlocked that book for me in amazing ways. And if I can get the first draft entirely written before my work starts up again on the 1st of July, that would be brilliant. And the way I'm going, it'll be done in plenty of time. That's how I write first drafts. They're either working or they're not. And when they're working, boy, it's like I got grabbed by a runaway train. They don't grab you so much. But I'm on something and it's going and I'm going with it. It doesn't seem to be under my control necessarily. And it's exhausting and I'm really tired from it because I'm writing for hours and hours every day. And it lights up my head in a way that's like a big translucent skull with twinkly lights in it, right? Like, what is that? The old Battlestar Galactica? One of those chief Cylons who had the big twinkly light heads? Like that. That's how it feels. It does something crazy to my brain and it's not entirely unpleasant. It's just really tiring and I don't sleep. So happy book writing. Get an idea that runs away with you, I guess, is my advice there. Although I've had the idea forever. I've had the idea forever and I've written it before and it always sucked. This time it does not suck. It's good. It's obviously I have to solve the rescuer problem. Go through and delete all the rescuers. Make it so she makes the choices and she figures it out. Doy. This is a problem I've had since my very first novel where the main character made one choice and then everything else just happened after that. Like, come on. that's not it's beautiful writing and a terrible plot. Absolutely terrible. And I found the story of it interesting. She had to develop her own independence, but yeah, it was a bad story. Bad plot. Also, for some inexplicable reason, I named the villain Malthus. I still don't know what I was thinking there. So anyway, writing. Good times, right? I hope everyone else is writing things you like, or at least you're enjoying the experience. Hope you're reading things you like, watching things you like. I have not watched TV, except to put Leverage commentaries on when I was losing my mind, because they always absolutely bring me down and centered. There's something really good about Leverage commentaries, and one day I need to get it together to record them into like MP3s so I can carry them around with me, because I guess I do have a Discman, but I'm not sure I can manage to play commentaries on it. I don't know what would happen if I put a DVD in a Discman. Probably nothing. Not sure. Or it might play the video as audio. Could be an interesting experience. So I need to do that one day, but it sounds really excruciating, so I probably never will. I cannot believe they're not out there somewhere on YouTube or something where I could just listen in the car or anywhere. I would like that. Make it so, universe. So that's a cure. Xanax and Leverage commentaries. Leverage commentaries give me the feeling that someone smart is in charge and everything's going to be all right. It's like what religion does for other people. Leverage commentaries do for me, which is very funny because the boss is drinking a lot the whole time, but I'm still like, yep, he's got it under control, and if he doesn't have it, Chris has it. We got it. It's gonna be all right. It's very good. I like it, and I like the competence. That show is entirely about competence and bad guys getting theirs, getting what's coming to them, and it's just so satisfying. And it's found family. It's everything I like. I should spend a whole episode on Leverage. Found family is something I need to work on. This story does not have it. It's all like fragmented family. My friend said, oh, you're writing another multi-generational family saga based on bad parenting? No way. Yeah, that's happening again. I don't know. Is it going to be 3 books like before? Blah. Maybe. We'll see. Okay, so that's my deal. I hope you're doing well, and I hope you're sleeping, and I hope you're writing. And that's the deal. All right, so I guess to tie it back in, Sacred Cheese of Life is we have a character who wants something. She wants something so badly. She wants a family. She wants to belong. She wants children. She wants to be with someone. She wants a career. She wants a focus in her life. She doesn't have any of them. She goes about getting them the wrong way, and that's awesome. I think that's great. I think that's very, very human. Going about getting what you want and need the wrong way, such that it takes it farther away from you. That's what we do. We all do that all the time. And it's the most human story I think there is. So, sacred cheese of life, right? Sacred cheese of life. Email me at sacredcheesepodcast@gmail.com if you have any comments or suggestions for texts to cover, or if you want to ask me the titles of those things I was talking about, because I will not say them on here, except the movie, which is Glass Onion, which I really enjoyed the first time, but boy, that's one you can only watch once, because once you understand, you're like, it makes zero sense that that guy did any of those things. Zero. Also, I have a whole theory about Andy. But anyway, irrelevant. Sacred cheese of life is what's important, right? Let's get it done. Okay, next time. Bye.